Welcome to another podcast episode brought to you by P2PEmpire.com. I'm your host Jakub Krejci, and I'll be teaching you how to create passive income by investing in P2P loans. I started investing in P2P loans back in 2017, and in 2020, I launched P2P Empire to bring more transparency into the P2P lending space to enable you to make a more educated investment decision. On this podcast, I'll be interviewing experts from the peer-to-peer lending industry so you can learn more about individual investments on various platforms in different countries. This podcast is sponsored by smart investors who enjoy our independent research and are interested in making informed investment decisions. If you're one of them, you can support our project on buymeacoffee.com/P2PEmpire. To learn more about how to make money from P2P lending, please visit our website P2PEmpire.com and watch our guides on our YouTube channel. Welcome back to another P2P Talk. My guest today is Kimmo Rytkönen, who is the CEO and co-founder of The Income Marketplace, which is a platform where you can earn up to 12% interest by investing in loans. In today's interview, we'll be diving deeper into some of the key features of the platform, which may have a positive effect on the safety of your investments in loans. So welcome to the interview, Kimmo.
Right, thank you, Jakub. Thanks for having me.
The Income Marketplace is a relatively new platform. Let's start with a brief introduction of yourself. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background?
I'm 43, have been in fintech, mostly lending part for the past 15 years, both in, let's call it, emerging markets and in more established markets like in Europe. And then, I've lived in Estonia for the last 13 years, almost 14 now, called Tallinn my home. And now, again, a startup entrepreneur once again.
I've reviewed your LinkedIn profile and you have quite a solid track record overall in the fintech space. Can you tell us something a bit more about your biggest achievements so far so investors can get an idea of?
Yeah, sure. So my career started around 2004 in online lending in Finland, knowing nothing about the topic. Sometimes you need to start from scratch. And from there on, building two quite sizable companies in that space, one of them being Asa Poland. That was actually also available on Mintos for some time. And then, maybe the biggest achievement is of course, the Indonesian bank lender Tunaiku, where I was part of the team that brought in the know-how on how to do lending in an emerging market. They listed in the Jakarta Stock Exchange at the start of 2020. I think that's so far the highlight of my fintech career.
And now you started a new marketplace in the P2P lending sector. So currently in 2021, the trend is that, lending companies are launching their own platforms, and you kind of decided to go a bit against that trend by launching your marketplace, which lists loans from another lender. So tell me, why is that?
When I left my previous company, the previous venture, I had the idea of maybe I should be doing another lending company of my own, but somehow that didn't feel like the thing to do, mainly because the opportunities are also in emerging markets. And I didn't really feel like relocating because of family things from Tallinn and, being close to Finland as well. So then I thought that what else can I do in the space? And I had some experience investing on other platforms. And then 2020 came, there were issues, of course, with COVID hitting these platforms. And I started looking at it, that what could we do better? Taking my experience and combining it with that. What can we do better? And then that's where the idea came for Income, and thinking that if we combine safety and simplicity into kind of peer-to-peer investing in loans, then that's effectively where, we can really build a great product for investors.
The current marketplaces, they seem to tackle most of the safety aspects with the buyback guarantee when it comes to consumer lending. Your marketplace has a slightly different approach where you guys try to minimize the lender's risk. So can you tell us a bit more about the funding structure of the loans listed on Income Marketplace?
Buyback guarantee, of course, is the first layer of defense, if you may. So basically isolates the investor from borrower defaults, if you may. So what really nobody has cracked is how to, before us, and that's something even unique what we do, is how to protect from the LO default, the loan originator default. So that's the main focus what we've done. And whichever loan originator we have today on the platform, the first thing is good thing to note is that they all have the same amount of, let's call it, security behind it. So the loan books have been analyzed that are placed, are acting as a security, and they've all been analyzed so that the investors would be covered one-to-one if those loan originators default. So that's the main differentiating factor to pretty much any platform in existence in Europe, at least at the moment. And the loan originators we have today, we have one from Brazil. They're offering consumer loans. We have another one from Indonesia doing short-term loans also to consumers and smaller, let's say, private entrepreneurs. Then we have a Finnish SME lender, quite small in scale, but regardless, serving the Finnish SME sector. And then just yesterday, we listed Finto from Latvia that is doing now car loans, which are quite attractive as an asset as well. So those are the four lenders we have today and a quite promising pipeline also.
So how do you do it in a practical way? How do you take over of the portfolio and take it as a security? How does it work practically?
Practically, all starts from analyzing the book, right? So in a similar fashion, if I do comparisons, we have Estate Guru figuring out what is the cash value of a building that they borrow against. So in a way, we analyze first, what is the cash value of the loan book that needs to go as collateral? Meaning the cash value with a house is, of course, when you sell the house. In our case, it would be the time it takes to collect, let's say 6 months, how much money comes back from that loan book. So that's the starting phase. Once we've established that, we put in certain risk adjustments. And after that, we define what is the junior share, or meaning the equity component in each loan, which is actually the loan originator's part in it. So other platforms call it skin in the game. We call it junior share. We call it junior share because it's actually subordinated to the senior investors, meaning that if there is a default of the loan originator loses the equity part fully, and then only will the investors. So there's a certain buffer that is built, meaning from the cash flow of the book, the buffer that covers the investors. So that's the kind of the very simple way of how we start the process. And then, of course, for example, if we take Dana Bishak in Indonesia, we look at with the local law firms, what is possible in that jurisdiction to do to secure the loans against the investment. So in Indonesia's case, we have a Singapore SPV that handles the cash and has the right to take over the loans in case there is a need, if there's an LO default. And then we have a backup service provider in a local collection company who would be taking over the collection of that loan book. So it's a combination of technology, legal structures, and of course, agreements.
On a slightly bigger marketplace in Europe, it has happened in the past where the loan originators did not transfer the funds back to the marketplace. And by extension of that, they were not distributed back to investors. So do you have a different kind of structure when it comes to the money flow from the borrower, maybe to the SPV and from the SPV to investors and then to the lenders? Or how is the setup here?
We have a little bit of a different, I mean, in that sense that we always get the gross amount of payments coming in to the SPV, and then we distribute the interest. Now, the problem that you referred to is that if the loan originator himself just refuses to hand over the cash, and thus there wouldn't be no distributions. This is, of course, this is mitigated normally by having borrowers paying directly to the SPV or paying directly to whoever is the investor. But this is actually not doable in many jurisdictions. If I take, for example, Indonesia again as an example, Dana Bishak is regulated by the local bank authority and it acts in a way as a peer-to-peer platform in itself. So when borrowers pay to Dana Bishak, they need to pay to Dana Bishak. They can't pay to anyone else. And then from the regulator part, Dana Bishak has the obligation within 2 days to forward those payments to the investors. And that meaning income in this case as well. What the risk is there, I think on when you mentioned the other marketplaces where such things have happened, I think it could be rather a question of how the loans have been agreed to act as a security, if they have been agreed to do that. In our case, obviously, if the loan originator would just say, we're not going to transfer it, we would have a very strong agreement to go against them. And then effectively, we would need to enforce that agreement. On the other hand, if I take an example in Brazil, where we have a little bit of a different kind of a security structure, the loans are pledged against those investments. And they're pledged in a way where actually the local law firm advised us that we don't really need to even go to court. It's just enough that we notify that there has been a default and we can go after the pledges and they will be transferred to us. So there are different ways of structuring it. I think that the problem that you refer to may be rather a structural problem, not necessarily anything else.
Are you new to P2P lending and confused by the terminology in this podcast? Get our P2P lending glossary on buymeacoffee.com/P2P Empire to fast track your knowledge in P2P lending.
So you feel confident that you have stronger legal agreements with the lenders. So in the worst case scenario, you have the right to take over the loan book as a whole, as a collateral. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, and what we have also, I mean, what we've built in terms of the technology, which gives us kind of an early, very early indication of if there's problems with the loan originator, is that our back end always mirrors the loan management system of the loan originator. Whereas on many platforms, and not saying names, on many platforms, there's an investment schedule. And then there is the real life situation of the loan. And these are not always aligned. And thus the kind of, how would I say, the fact that are you really invested in a loan or something similar, but not really into that loan, that gets blurred. In our case, we know what's the exact status of the asset. Mm-hmm. And that gives us also a very good visibility and ability to enforce. So it, like I said, it's a matter of legal structures and also technology that we built from ground up to enable it. And all my investments, what I've had in P2P before, I've pretty much pulled it to income because I think our security structure is superior to anyone in the market.
In the worst case scenario, where let's say a lender is defaulting, I can imagine it can be quite challenging for a European Estonian-based company to start taking over the debt collection for a lender in Brazil, right? What's your take on that? How would you deal with that situation?
Well, for sure. I mean, as a general rule of thumb, what we do is we establish a local SPV for this reason. For example, closer to the jurisdiction, let's say in Indonesia, having Singapore-based entity gives us faster access. We don't need to start going something to enforce in an Estonian court and then possibly going there. We are right there. So the agreements in Indonesia's case, for example, have been done with the local SPV. So this gives us at least a head start in legal proceedings if it's needed.
How do lenders react to this kind of legal structure? I can imagine that for them, it's not as attractive as for the investors to give their portfolio as collateral in order to access funds so they can fund their loans, right?
Yeah.
So what is the reaction here when you guys do due diligence or when you talk to potential partners?
It's a good question. And for sure, I mean, we can't compete with the terms that many other platforms have. I mean, the, you know, 5%, 10% skin in the games, there's no way that we can compete with that in terms of the leverage that the LOs get. Liquidity is another thing. As a new platform, of course, you know, the more support we get from early stage investors coming into the platform, the stronger we grow in terms of liquidity, the more power we have is actually to push certain security measures onto the loan originators. So it's in a way, it's a chicken egg problem, what we're dealing here. The more investors we have, then the better the investors will be protected because the LOs will be agreeing to better terms to them. But all in all, I mean, that said, we can't compare ourselves to other marketplaces because we can't compete there. But what we always like to say with to the LOs is that we actually offered you guys funding on market terms. So if you go to London, if you go to New York, if you find these specialty lenders that want to put a direct investment into your company as a loan originator, these guys will not give you anything with 5% skin in the game or 10% skin in the game. They pretty much would require 20, 30% equity part in each loan, which actually acts in the same way as the junior share that we've introduced. So that's what we keep telling them. And actually, what is interesting is we are having discussions with several institutions as well on them providing liquidity to the marketplace. And when we've showed them how we think, how we structure, you know, the discussions have actually gone forward and they say, hey, this looks pretty solid. This looks interesting to us. If we would be going just with 5% skin in the game, we probably couldn't attract institutional money at all. And that said, so far, loan originators have been very positive, actually. They realized that we, at least at the start, we bridge a growth gap in that sense. We are an alternative to other marketplaces where for some reasons they don't want to be. And it's always good for a loan originator to have several feet or hands in funding. So even if they are active on a current marketplace or they have outside funding, they are still so far have been at least very keen to discuss with us on diversifying that funding base.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So far looks positive, mm-hmm. to be honest.
All right, let's talk about some of the core products here, like the loans. I just reviewed the current portfolio, the active portfolio of the Income Marketplace. So you are currently listing loans from four lenders, the biggest one being your lending company in Indonesia. How are the loans performing in Indonesia? I'm aware the COVID situation is not very good there. I think there has been a lot of restrictions in the market. How did this impact the default rate and possibly the collection of debt?
With Dana Bishak's case, there was a clear drop obviously. And I think the same drop you could see from all the other big European marketplaces as well. When COVID hit, there was a significant drop in performance, but actually we were not active yet with income on that one. The good thing about lenders, when they do their work well, and we see that when we analyze the loan tapes, they adjust. So they adjust their risk scoring models, and even the models adjust, but also credit policy adjusts. And to be honest, once Dana Bizsak was onboarded, we already saw that actually it had become pretty stable, the performance. So I would say the performance is as expected at the moment. But we also, when we were calculating the what we call cash flow buffer, we also added there's still about 15%, so 15% margin for COVID-related drop if there's a fourth wave that could somehow materially affect the payments of the loans. And in the case that we would need to take over the portfolio. So we have a small buffer there at the moment, just to be sure. But Indonesia has stabilized so far quite nicely, and the credit models have taken it into account. And actually the same thing pretty much goes everywhere. Lenders have adapted.
Mm-hmm. I think on your marketplace that you have some kind of connection to the lenders yourself. So can you disclose a bit more, like what is your stake in the companies?
Absolutely. Yeah, so Dana Bizsak, I have no stake, and of course not with Finto either. With FinY, I know the guy, I'm advising them, meaning Finyritysrauta is the Finnish one. I started onboarding the companies that I know the kind of know or know beforehand. And even the CEO of Dana Bizsak, I met him like 2 years ago in a random occasion. And then once I started launching, we started discussing if they would be onboarded. But where I have the connection is ClickCash. So I did, when ClickCash was in, call it almost pre-seed stage, I did a small investment there. So I hold today about 9% of ClickCash. To be diluted, they got once their equity raise finishes, but that's the moment what there is.
Another hot topic amongst investors are obviously audited financials for the lending companies.
Yes.
I just reviewed some of the lenders and I found some reports for actually every lender, however, audited reports just for one for last year. So shall we expect some audited reports in the future, or is it just not a standard in the local markets, or what would you say here?
You can expect audited reports. Dana Bizsak, for example, the Indonesian one just finished their audit, so we will be uploading them shortly. ClickCash is going to upload it once the year ends. So this year they will be audited that first time fully. They had the first year was longer, the first fiscal year. So yes, you can expect the audited reports. And of course, we're pushing towards getting quarterly reports out, kind of like management reports out as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that's been asked from us by a lot of investors. And there's been so many things flying around with the security structures that this is something that we've flagged to the LOs. And we've actually agreed with them. But the delivery has been a little bit slower than what we expected. But this is something that we'll pick up with them as well. But you can expect those.
Are you wondering whether it's safe to invest in P2P loans? It can be if you invest on a legitimate platform. To help you make a responsible and informed investment decision, we have created a workbook that will help you get a quick overview of the legitimacy of any platform. With this guide, you will significantly reduce the chances of investing in fraudulent platforms. Get a copy of our guidebook at buymeacoffee.com/P2PEmpire.
A lot of investors are also wondering about, obviously, the diversification options on a marketplace, right? At this today, I think 82% are just loans from Indonesia. I am aware in one of your recent interviews, you have mentioned that you're currently considering 100 lending companies, doing 19 due diligence processes on them. So what is the short-term future prediction in terms of onboarding new lenders, with what type of loan types and perhaps what countries, if you can disclose some info here?
Yeah, sure. Like I said, it's a chicken egg issue, right? So the more investors we have, the more the LOs want to work with us and the faster they want to work with us because the offer from us is more compelling in that sense. At the same time, we realize that investors wish to see that they can diversify because diversification has been the mantra in P2P, how to avoid losses. To be fair, personally think that protecting your principal by choosing something like what we do, where actually the LO default has been taken into account, the situation by means of some sort of security, then I think that's actually a stronger strategy. But that's beside the point. Yeah, so our short-term projection and view is we'd like to get about one LO added per month. So by the end of the year, if we have two or three more, Finto just came just now in September, end of September. So 1 to 2, 3 loan originators by the end of the year. And then we are actually in quite a happy place in regards of growth. And those loans will be partly European, partly emerging markets. Probably we're talking installment loans and short short-term loans at the moment issued to consumers, which is the most kind of like booming space anyway.
All right. I know that Income Marketplace is based in Estonia. So currently there we have in Latvia the investment firm brokerage license, which some of the marketplaces have obtained. What is like the regulatory environment that you're looking at in Estonia?
Well, today, of course, the first thing is that the European crowdfunding regulation came, the directive. Estonia is now writing the national version of that. And effectively, it was supposed to come still this year. It looks like it is not coming yet. And if it comes even to now, most likely it will be leaving out loan marketplaces still in the first, let's call it first tranche or first phase. So today we are not regulated because we can't really apply for a regulation. This is something that we would have actually wanted to do also because we know that investors are looking at it as well and it kind of creates a certain, you know, trustworthiness. So today the regulatory environment in Estonia is there is no regulation. We can't even apply for a regulation, but we expect something to come next year. And then as soon as it's out, we will of course be applying.
What about the application for electronic money institution license? That's been also quite trendy in the market. Is this something you're considering at this point?
I think not at the moment. I mean, there are ways to cooperate with existing payment providers, and we're in discussions with a few if that's something that's interesting. I think for our roadmap, the main thing is to get ourselves regulated under crowdfunding laws, and then after that, see what are the benefits of actually going under payment provider or money electronic money licenses.
I've also got information that you're raising more money.
Yep.
I think in the first round, you have raised 1 million. Now in the second round, you are aiming to raise 1.3. Or 1.2 million.
Yeah.
So what is the money going to be used for?
Yeah, so we raised 1 million euros of, call it pre-seed, to get to where we are today. So meaning we have a ready product, we have a mobile app, which, you know, investors so far have liked quite a bit because it's much more simple to use. We built a team, and now what we need to is we need to raise more money to onboard more LOs, of course, onboard more investors, even that costs money, and to build the product and improve it. So we have a few things what we want to do. We want to simplify the mobile app still quite a bit. We want to build a secondary market, which we already started the development, but we want to really make a good product out of it. And then we need to add a few more people into the team, and that's more likely meaning lawyer, one more analyst to monitor the LOs as they grow. So basically growth-related positions and improving the product is where the money will go.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're right. We did go for SeedBlink now. So the campaign is actually active at the moment. It's a smaller platform as well, but we thought that it's important that you give a chance even to the new ones, smaller ones. And SeedBlink has a good tech focus, so that's why we chose them as the crowdfunding part now.
Mm-hmm. You have obviously a very growth-oriented mindset, at least that's my impression. What type of investors are you currently attracting? Are you just focused on the European market, or do you allow also investors from non-European countries to join Marketplace and earn yield on their investments?
No, unfortunately, we can't have people from outside of Europe at the moment. I mean, people with a permanent residence permit can invest, but that just comes mostly from our bank's AML policies, to be honest. So we went through everything with them, what is acceptable, what can be done. And to be honest, it's a drain on resources at first phase. I think we can look at it again later, but there's so many European investors at this stage, even in Estonia, that we'd like to focus on onboarding them as well as possible and not having a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
On the growth mindset, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I put myself quite significant amount of my own money into the project as well. So, you know, and you don't invest 1 million euros to build a marketplace and then just want to do something small. So yeah, we want to be really, really big, onboard LOs. Our kind of what we're looking at here is 100 million euros of loans invested in is the first kind of a milestone where we can say, hey, we got it here. And then, of course, it doesn't end there. Even if you look at the more successful ones in the past or existing in the market at the moment, the opportunities are much higher.
All right, Kimmo, thank you very much for your time.
Very good.
For the listeners of this podcast episode or viewers on YouTube, if you want to learn more about the Income Marketplace or get updates about the latest developments of the platform, you can head over to p2pempower.com and read our review. Thank you, Kimmo, again for your time, and I wish you all the best with your platform.
Very good. Thank you, Jakub. Thanks for having me.